Before we begin, I would like to emphasize that this podcast is separate from my teachings and work at Del Seton Medical Center. Any discussions we have on this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and in no way connected to Del Seton Medical Center. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Life of Flow podcast. Today, we had an amazing episode with Giacomo and Andrea. They are two physicians that work together in Italy. One is a podiatrist,
internal medicine,
subspecialized in podiatry, and the other one is a vascular surgeon. And we're going to talk to them about their pioneering experience in deep venous arterialization, the ins and outs, how they dove into that, and the great outcomes and kind of like the forerunners of this that they are. So it was a great conversation,
very fun,
and I hope you guys enjoy it.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
Welcome to yet another episode of Life of Flow. My name is Miguel Montero Baker, and I am your co-host together with
Lucas Ferrer.
And again, this is one of the series that we are recording in a very special place, because we came to the HENDOLAT meeting, which is the, I would say, probably one of the main meetings in Latin America for vascular and endovascular therapy, a multidisciplinary place of gathering of also friends, because I think that's what's made HENDOLAT very special. It's you got to know somebody to come. You just don't get invited. It's really by invitation only of close friends, and that makes it special. But anyway, we at the Life of Flow podcast had the dream that we could be here and spend some time with our good friends and having discussions that we normally don't get to have. And as you all know, part of the podcast's je ne sais quoi kind of way of being, modus operandi, is we want to have these discussions that are almost like those discussions at the end of the day with a good whiskey or a good wine. So today we have a real pleasure. This is a super awesome podcast. I'm already incredibly excited because we have two of our good friends from Italy, Dr. Andrea Cassini to my right. Andrea,
hello. Hello.
And also Dr. Giacomo Clerici. Hello, Giacomo.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's awesome. Giacomo, you are a podiatrist, correct?
Actually, I am specialized in internal medicine, and after that, I had a training for more than 5 years in surgery, in diabetic foot surgery, and so I am sort of specialized in foot surgery, in particular in diabetic foot surgery.
But from a background of internal medicine.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I started as an internal medicine student, and after that, after 5 years, I decided to go ahead with my specialty in foot care, in diabetic foot care.
I love that.
And how long was that training in Italy?
Internal medicine, 5 years. Mm-hmm. After 6 years of medicine. So after 6 years, you have other 5 years for internal medicine. Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. I didn't know that. You can't do that in the U.S. You can't be an internal medicine guy and then become a surgeon. Unless you do a surgical training.
Yeah. I think all around the world is the same. Just
you can't. You can't become a surgeon and get privileges at a hospital.
No. Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to do this.
But the reason was because in the, I think, end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, I started my career in diabetic foot care in the middle of the 90s. So today is almost 30 years experience. But in that period, in the middle of the 90s, no one wanted to take care of these patients because the only therapy they offered was the major amputations.
Yeah.
And so some diabetologists in Italy, some pioneers, started to do surgeries, started to work with orthopedics in the operating theater, with plastic surgeons, with vascular surgeons, and try to steal some some tricks for surgery. So after that, I had a training for many years with many colleagues in plastic, specializing in plastic surgery or in orthopedics. And this was the reason why, as an internal medicine specialist, became a foot surgeon.
So is this, I mean, obviously you made this, you made your own path. You created this out of interest, but out of the need of these patients. But if somebody now says, I want to be like Giacomo Clerici.
Impossible.
There is only one Giacomo. Yes, no, but that, let's say, you know, I'm a young, medical student, and I want to follow your career, and I'm in Italy, yep. Because obviously it's very different by country. What would be the way to follow your steps professionally?
Actually, I would recommend to be part of the of a multidisciplinary team, and after that, if you want to do a surgeon to do surgery, I think that you must be specialized in foot surgery, like orthopedics or even vascular surgeons, etc. I think that today the time is completely different if you compare when we started in the middle of the 90s. So I would suggest to take the specialty in orthopedics because in Italy we do not have podiatrists. We have podologists, but podologists are
non-surgical.
Exactly. Yeah. They are medical, a sort of medical specialty, even if it is not a medical specialty, but they are not surgeons. So we do not have podiatrists. We have orthopedics specialized in foot and ankle surgery. And I think that the first step could be this one. And or you can take another, for example, general surgeon, and then you can follow, you can attend some courses, etc., in order to become a foot surgeon, diabetic foot surgeon, or even a vascular surgeon. Why not? And if you want to be a specialist in wound care, you can, of course, to be even an internal medicine specialist or dermatologist or whatever you want.
Okay. And Andrea, you're a vascular surgeon.
Yes, traditional.
Traditional vascular surgery.
Traditional.
What's vascular. Traditional vascular surgery in Italy? You do medical school, then you do general surgery?
You need the same degrees, and then you do the specialty in vascular surgery that are 5 years in Italy.
So it's straight from medical school, you can go into vascular surgery,
yes,
it's a 5-year
program. 5 years only of vascular surgery.
Do you have the fellowship way that we have in the U.S. where you can become a general surgeon and then do 2 years of vascular?
No, in Italy it's completely different. We have 5 years dedicated to vascular surgery, we did not the following general surgery.
Okay, so that's the only way to get
only way, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, let's try to dive into what we wanted to talk. And I think one of the reasons I was talking to Lucas about we were hoping we can get you guys to sit down with us for a little bit was because of a very unjust and unfair topic that we have given you guys. Because today I gave 8 minutes in an hour and a half session, but I told Andrea, you have 8 minutes. To summarize your group's experience of 7 years or more of doing venous arterialization for the no option CLTI patient. And so I thought that was a little unfair because I'm sure that within 7 years, there's a lot of things, maybe not even scientific, that we may want to talk about here today in the evolution of the technique.
You know, one thing that's always I love about Italians giving presentations is that even though you give them 7, 8, 5 minutes, they always sneak a little bit about philosophy into your presentation. So you learn about everything.
Oh, these guys are
minutes.
The godfathers.
I know. Like, they're like,
like, they just make it so cool.
I just want right? to like,
Their presentations are so cool. If you haven't seen either Roberto, Andrea, or Giacomo, go out of your way and find them because their meetings are it's almost like a philosophical class with some science and but anyway, so maybe let's go back. Let's start before the 7 years. You guys were all working together still. How long have you two known each other?
More or less 20 years.
20 years.
20 years, and you're still friends.
Yes. More.
Better than a marriage.
Actually, yes, more.
Better than a marriage.
There have been a few wives in the middle.
Not me. Andrea is not yet. An expert.
Andrea is an expert monogamist.
Don't say no.
Okay, so you guys have known each other for almost 20 years. You have worked together also for 20 years. How about Roberto? Is Roberto been also part of this team for that many years?
I met Roberto, I think around 10 years ago or better. I knew Roberto many, many years ago, but he was used to work with another team, with Carlo Caravaggi, another diabetologist who became a foot surgeon, a very, very good foot surgeon. And after that, we joined Roberto in Bergamo because he needed a team dedicated to the diabetic foot care. And so I think that I met Roberto around 2015, so more or less 8-10 years ago, I think around that date,
And so, by the way, for those listening in and don't know Roberto, Roberto Ferraresi is the third part of this dream team, and Roberto is an interventional cardiologist. Yeah. And I think you know, at this, by now, you're probably connecting the dots. That is exactly how these patients need to be cared for. Yeah. You need to have the foot surgeon expert wound care management. You have the vascular surgeon with open abilities. And then you have also somebody that's phenomenal at wires. And I think this is a very interesting concept that you guys have taught us through many years, right? And I trained with Joe Meals, and I trained with David Armstrong, also trying to bring together the foot surgery and the vascular care into the daily practice. But anyway,
did that happen organically, that you guys decided, oh, we need a vascular surgeon and intervention cardio and a podiatrist? Or is that just because you were friends and you like working with each other? Or
from my point of view, I started a little bit earlier because I am a little bit older than Andrea. And when I started in the middle of the 90s, I was very lucky because I met Ezio Faglia. Ezio Faglia was an amazing person and a brilliant brain. Unfortunately, he's not here yet, or actually anymore. When we start, we work in a small group. But year after year, we understood that we needed more person involved. So we started with an interventional radiologist, but then we understood that we needed a vascular surgeon. After that, we needed a podologist. We needed wound care, nurse specialist, et cetera, et cetera. So the group started very small, and after that became very, very big.
Is this in a setting of like a private practice or the government hospital?
It's a good question. In Italy, we have more or less three ways. We have a public hospital, very good, because we have the universal coverage for everyone. No one has to pay anything for the treatment. We have private hospitals with a dealing with the health national system. It means that you are private, but you work like a public hospital. This is our situation. We work in a private hospital, but our patients do not pay anything for the treatment because it's paid by the government, it's paid by the country, the healthcare system. And then there are some pure private hospitals, but usually for diabetic foot, no one goes to the private hospital because our population, our patients, our people with diabetes and foot problems are in a, I think, in a middle class or lower classes. And so I think the most used hospital is the public or private with the public deal.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, let me pull you in with, you said 7 years of experience. So I'm guessing before the 7 years, you had already, as a group maybe, or maybe Roberto, I don't know, you tell me, had recognized that there was this really difficult pattern of disease and you were losing the fights. You were losing every fight, I'm guessing, and it was probably very frustrated, because that's kind of how I started. But I want to hear it, you know, how When did you guys start saying, man, we got to do something else? Something's not working for us in these patients.
About arterialization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to talk about your arterialization experience. So I want to know, before you started doing the first cases, you were probably finding a lot of frustration with some of the bad results you were having. Huh?
Yeah. Yes, but we must be honest. Before the first case, I didn't know anything about arterialization. It's my fault. I never read something about this kind of procedure. And the first case I remember, like, was yesterday. And in the OR was me and Giacomo. So imagine a vascular surgeon and an internal medicine specialist perform the first arterialization. What happens? It was a patient in which we do a lot of mistakes, because the patient was admitted for a CLTI. We studied the patient with the anterograde approach. The patient has the patency of all the artery, ATK, BTK, BTA, and so the question is, who is charged? This patient, it's a failure, it's not an ischemic patient, so we dismiss the patient. And after 1 week, we admitted the patient again because the clinical status was worsening, because the rest pain was much higher, and there is also the chanosis of the first toe. So we admitted the patient again and studied the patient with a contralateral approach. The contralateral approach shows that we miss an iliac plaque that due an embolization, and so the patient has a complete thrombosis of the pedal and posterior tibial vessel.
Oh.
It was a problem because it was not simple. I bring the patient in the OR and I start with the thrombectomy of the pedal artery and the posterior tibial artery. Perhaps the success was 1 hour. The patient going in subacute ischemia, so I bring up the patient again in the OR, do the same procedure, and the patient was failed. The procedure was failed. So we was in the OR with Giacomo planning a BTK amputation. And the patient was not so happy, because he told us, but I come for the rest pain, I lose my leg, why?
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked to Giacomo and told him, but try to do something. We have a posterior tibial artery. I saw a posterior tibial vein. Try to do an anastomosis from the posterior tibial vein to the posterior tibial artery. He looked at me and he told me, we will go in the jail. Perhaps no, but I don't know.
But you had seen this never. About arterialization?
Yeah, never.
You
never.
Had not seen the
never.
Talk?
Never Nobody idea. Had said anything. Never idea, never
this
idea.
Is, you're there in the middle of this case and you're just like...
So, yeah, I have a considerative
attitude. You say, F it. I'm going to try something because I'm going to give this guy an option.
Based on the theory that when you do a bypass and you have a high resistance outflow, you do a fistula.
Yes, this is a very old...
old technique.
Yeah, so old technique in surgery. If you have bad outflow, you can do a fistula so that you let the bypass have some outflow.
Perfect. You increase the resistance, yeah. Peripheral resistance. So I take the artery in a terminal way and attach to posterior tibial vein, do the endovalvulectomy with a Fogarty catheter. We completed the anastomosis, and what happened? It happened that the patient is going well with a reduction of the rest pain, and we complete the procedure with a Chopard amputation, leave it open because there was a major tissue loss. So we cover with a dermal substitute, and after a couple of months, we cover with skin graft, the patient was healed.
No way.
And yes. And after 5 years, yep. The patient is still without rest pain and healed.
And you're out of jail.
No,
you didn't go to jail.
Still now, no, because we didn't show anything to the patient. So so this is, in our mind, was rising the question, we can do something different. And so we at this time we work with Jacques Lerici, that in my opinion is a phenomenon in interventional radiology, one of the most beautiful hands that I saw.
Where does he work?
And now he works through Panama and Canada.
Retired.
Fishing.
But was one, I think, was one of the most, I think maybe it is still today, he is still today one of the most, I think, I could say
genius.
Master
genius
in the endovascular.
He's an interventional radiologist from Italy.
No, from France.
From France.
Do you want to know something very, very special, very, very funny? His name is Jacques Clerici.
Yeah.
In Italian, it's Giacomo Clerici.
No.
Yes. Oh. Perhaps I'm the same person, but I don't know.
Maybe. Clones.
I would like. I would love.
I figure me and Giacomo.
He has two hands.
Yeah, beautiful.
Magic.
And how did you guys connect?
We work together in the first hospital.
And so he was French, but he was working in Italy.
In Scopaglia, we were in the multimedical hospital in Milan.
Okay.
So and he was the interventional radiologist of Multimedica. So I started to work with him in the Multimedica.
Got it. Okay.
So the rising question, me and Giacomo, is without any kind of arteries on the foot, why we didn't use the vein system? We speak with Jacques Lerici. For Jacques Lerici, everything is simple. Everything is simple. You ask Lerici, I have a fistula on the brain. Don't worry, we embolize. You have anything.
He can do anything.
Anything. Anything.
We're going to have to get him on the show one day.
Get him on the show.
That sounds like an incredible human.
Anything.
I like to do the same relationship. I like to think about Jacques Lerici as the Pelé or Maradona of the situation. The same.
Okay. Well, okay. I get it. Okay. So you talk to him and he's like, it's easy.
Oh, yes, it's feasible. It's feasible, yes.
And he would speak Italian.
Yeah, yeah.
He learned the language.
Yes, very well.
Speaks very well.
Better than us.
not difficult.
So a week later, we admitted to a hospital a patient of Giacomo with rest pain gangrene. It was a very fancy 82 years old woman. We started with the angio and show a completely no option. So we go to the patient and we told to the patient, you require a BTK amputation. I don't think so. The answer of the patient, you don't think so, but it's the only way that we can carry on your life. No, I can go to the theater without one leg. No, you can go. You wear a prosthesis.
Like she wanted to go to the opera.
The
orchestra. She's very fancy.
I have a lot of shoes. And I can go to the opera. So I speak with Giacomo.
Side comment is always funny when these patients come to the lab. I know it's kind of not funny, but it's, they come with gangrene. But their nails are beautifully polished.
Yeah, I know.
We have a lot of pictures.
I've always found this very amazing. Interesting. It's like, this is, in Espanol, dicen antes muerta que sencilla.
Yeah.
Probably I would
good
die
sign,
before
probably good
I
sign
lose
of compliance.
My... This lady wants something to go to the opera.
But not the BTK amputation to go to the opera. And so we try to do the second way. And the patient hasn't the saphenous vein because naturally she underwent to a saphenectomy in the young age.
Of course, for her varicose veins.
For her aesthetic, the problem is the telangiectasis. And we bring the patient in the OR and we do the first bypass using heparin banded PTF graft from the popliteal artery to the posterior tibial vein. Then I call Clerici, that destroy everything, the anastomosis, the posterior tibial vein, the plantar vein, but I think it was a genius, and we can find the exit way without know everything, and the patient underwent a TMA amputation, and after 3 months, he go to the opera with their shoes, her shoes. And so, raising much more the idea that something could change with this technique. And the third case was the arterialization of a patient, a similar patient, using the Grissaphenos vein. Then we met Roberto. We share our experience with Roberto that was starting to work with the LymphFlow project. And
do you remember the year?
2016.
I think so.
2016.
Okay.
2016. Yes, when we joined him in Galassini Hospital.
Fortunately, we go to work together, Giacomo, me, and Roberto, and start to do and start to arterialize everything.
Every no option patient,
we arterialize. Bilateral, dialysis, diabetes, everything.
Yeah.
And the learning curve was very, very, very hard. We have a lot of bleeding in the cath lab. We had a lot of rupture of the proximal distal anastomosis. Roberto that told me, you are not able to do the anastomosis. And I told Roberto, you are not able to dilate the vein. So there was a lot of fighting.
There's moments of tension.
Imagine if you're there
doing a bypass and it takes you, you're dissecting, you're getting proximal control distal, you're using a 7-0 proline, beautiful, and it looks beautiful, and then this dick guy comes with catheters and an 034 wire,
just like
cha-cha-cha, trying to like break all the valves, and he ripped the anastomosis and then said, you don't know how to do an anastomosis.
Exactly. If this is what
typical
happened.
Cardiologist.
It's not my fault. It's not my fault
because at the beginning we do the endovalvulectomy with a with a big size balloon. So we treat a vein of 1 millimeter and he used 5 millimeters balloon. What the fuck? It's normal. It's normal that you broke everything. So, but. The week pass and I try to modify my technique. So I change the length of the anastomosis because I do a traditional anastomosis. So I think perhaps I have to change the angle of my landing on the on the vein. I have to change the length of the anastomosis. So I change the angle, more acute angle, more lung anastomosis, and the result was better because I allow Roberto to pass with the guide wire, with the catheter, with the balloon, and so we developed the hybrid technique both in a deep plantar system than in superficial dorsal.
So you're saying Roberto was right?
Yes. No. we finally arrive at an agreement. And then I think that the result was the same, and so I think why I have to spend a lot of time an arterialization on the deep plantar system. It's easier, the hybrid on the superficial dorsal system is faster, is safer, we continue to do and stress the arterialization of superficial dorsal system till nowadays, in which we think we arrive to the final till now solution, that is the monoaccess to avoid the instances of the distal approach. We understand which collateral you have to coiling in the early for focalize the blood flow. We have standardized the exit way from the first toe vein and the metatarsal blanch. Now we have understand a little bit more things than before, and so that's how boring the arterialization boring for a very desperate patient in which perhaps we felt more guilty for misleading the disease of the patient
but
that was leading to amputation.
You guys are developing this and you are having more and more cases, and you're also giving the foot surgeon more and more cases. But now we know that the foot surgery is completely different.
Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit, Giacomo, as you guys are developing, at what point did you say,
No.
What the fuck? what I've done my entire life is not working, and I'm going to have to learn how to reoperate these patients. When did you come to this? I'm sure it's over multiple failures, sadly. But obviously, you've now taught so many of us that we now know what to do, and we thank you for that. But share a little bit of your perspective as you were.
I want to add a part of the story, because this, your question is the second part of the story. We were good, or better, they were good in this kind of new revascularization. But actually, at the beginning, we failed a lot in foot surgery, in the outcomes of the foot surgery, because we use the same rules we have for a regular diabetic foot patient. That is to, when there is no infection, to do a closure for first intention, et cetera, et cetera. So we understood that looking at the pictures of the angiogram when they do the embolization, the second, the third, et cetera, that something during the months, during the weeks was changing. And we had new vessels, new networks, etc. And so we understood, because we had some cases where we perform, we carry out, the, for example, a transmetatarsal amputation with primary closure, skin, with the suture of the skin, with the stapler, etc. We saw many, many failed patients. And so looking at the picture and considering the fate of these patients, we understood that we had to change our routine. And our routine today is that we understood that we have to wait and see what happens clinically from an angiographic point of view, etc. And for example, checking the patients with a TCPO2, checking the patients with the angiogram during the embolization, etc. We understood that we have to wait at least 45, 60, 90 days, and your success increases until you, if you wait a lot, because you have a very good network, you have a very new very good new vessels, new arteries, because the acute result is not useless, is not useful for the foot. You have a very good pictures if you look at the acute result after the an arterialization, but from a physiological point of view, you do not have a useful blood flow.
Now, do you, as a foot surgeon, that maybe you never had to, but do you see yourself understanding more on the vascular side? Like, do you look at the angiograms? Do you look at the focalization?
Sure.
Do you look at it, is it medial marginal or is it lateral plantar? Because I feel this is a part where, at least in my practice, that's where I've had to push a lot more on my podiatrist to say, no, I need you to come into the room.
Exactly.
I need you to look at these angiograms.
Sure.
You cannot do a surgery unless you've seen the angiograms.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the vessels, you need to learn the vessels. Because if you're going to operate on these patients, you need to know where you're going to cut and how you're going to cut. So do you feel like you know angiography at this point?
This is a very good point. It is a very good question, because I have learned a lot from vascular surgeons and interventional radiologists, because in the 90s, but also in 2010, 2000, we were used to go to the meeting, to the conferences, podiatrists, in one part, the conference of vascular surgeon in another, etc., etc. You talked about arteries,
complete,
you talked about biomechanics. And when we started to do conferences together, when the toe and flow teams started to do this kind of meeting together, we learned a lot from each other. I think that usually vascular surgeons or interventional radiologists are not so used to talk about biomechanics. Today, I have seen many lectures about vascular surgeons. They are very good in biomechanics. It is incredible. And I have to say that this was a very fruitful exchange. Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
Miguel,
mm-hmm, yeah.
I think the
Do you remember the first hybrid DVA we did, and when I was a fellow?
There are a lot of things from when you were a fellow that I have purposely forgotten and removed out of my hype drive. So if it's more engraved than yours, I would love you to share, but I'm not sure what you're going to say.
We had this young patient that came in with like some form of
vasculitis. Oh, of course I do. Yeah,
I remember that. And we go in and we saw, I think we had seen a perineal and we were going to do a femperineal bypass or something like that. We go in, we take the fibula out, look at the perineal, shit, right? So then we look at the angiogram again. We're scratching our heads. What we're going to do. And then we say, oh, maybe there's a PT. So we go get the PT. Oh, there's the PT. We find it. We do the anastomosis.
I think I remember this.
And then we put the Doppler on it, and it doesn't sound arterial. It sounds like a vein. So then you rip the gown off. You go outside. And I'm like, they're waiting.
I needed a timeout.
Yeah.
So meaning that, just to follow. So we had done the anastomosis, thinking it was a posterior tibial artery, but we connected it to the vein in the
vein on the foot. Yeah.
And so it didn't sound that good, probably.
And it sounded super low resistance and just like.
But like.
Yeah.
It was just going up.
Yeah. It sounded like
Okay.
And then you come back. You said everything's fine. Everything's fine. I think you had called Roberto and you said, hey, I think I connected this. I think I did like a hybrid DVA by mistake. And then we came back. We did the endovalvulectomy. She was in horrible
pain. Yeah, I remember she was in
horrible
pain.
We come back. I think you made another phone call. We come back to do the TMA. Pain's resolved and she healed.
No, she's still walking.
She's still walking. Yeah.
And that, was a case I remember texting you, texting Giacomo, texting Roberto. But some serendipity sometimes. It was only the only reason was because I had heard a talk at some point here, maybe Endolat or some other place. And I'm probably saying really bad words outside, trying to figure out what we're going to do because it was that or a major amputation. And she was young woman. But it worked out. It worked out. And then we had some pretty bad, tough cases. Dehiscence of the wounds, swelling, infection of grafts, exposure. I saw the PTFE stent in the saphenous vein. I did that too. It did also exposed. So
it's funny how the first one for a lot of people works.
Yes.
But then you're like, oh, I'm so good at this. And then you do more and more, and then they start failing.
Kumar was saying that earlier in his college. He's like, he did one, it worked, and then he's like, oh man, I'm so good. And then everything after that was horrible.
So my first...
maybe if the first didn't work, we didn't...
Yeah, correct. Then you would have not continued.
We were very lucky, and the patients patients today are very lucky because of these experiences.
Yeah. It's God's way of helping his clients.
My first one, and you gave me a lot of shit about it too. When I was by myself in San Antonio, as I go in...
Oh, I really didn't care about it. I gave you a lot of shit when we put the patients together to publish.
Yeah. Well, still, because, it's fun. It's hilarious.
No, but let me tell you why. Yeah. Because, I get to the point, by the time he finishes training, we are the pure, to your point. Like, hey, this guy gets this, we do it this way. We've learned a lot. God bless you, go on your way. Fly, little birdie. And he goes to San Antonio... like always, you don't hear about them a lot. And then he's like, hey, I've done some DVAs. And I say, oh, we're putting our paper together. Send us your data. My resident talks to him. They finish. Paper comes written. And I wanted this paper to be hybrid, single incision, GSV, and endo DVA. And I'm reading through and it says, a artegraft bovine. A bovine carotid graft was used. And I'm reading this. What is this shit? And I call my resident. What are you? He said, I don't know. Dr. Ferrer's cases are weird, are all over the place. And then it was like a PTFE. I don't know what. Like, you did some crazy
because
shit.
I didn't have anything. I didn't have anything. I go in.
Cow carotid
used. The ultrasound was completely wrong. I go, this young guy, I remember he still has his leg. I go in, teacher, still teaching. Like, that's how he, like,
and you know, develop a relationship with this guy. And I tried the traditional approach, didn't work. So I'm there, and I ultrasound is like good vein. So I go in, and the vein is shit, complete shit, right? So I say, okay, what do we have? We just have like an 8 PTFE, ring PTFE, and then we have like a 5 bovine carotid. Okay.
The bovine carotid. Cow carotid sounds exceptionally good.
I said, okay, well, give
so
me that.
So much for standardization of technique.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you like go into like some...
I like it.
Yeah. And the guy worked.
It worked. It worked well.
First one, and it worked.
That's beautiful. Crazy. That's good. So at what point, guys, do you start figuring out these no options are probably you can find them early on? Because I think that's where we should probably be going. And I put that slide in my talk where if you have a high MAC, meaning a high calcification pattern, and you have a pretty bad wound, chances are you're probably going to arterialize this patient. So at what point do you guys say, we are identifying high calcium, high MAC scores? And I think it was Roberto's idea to try to create the classification. Yeah. But how were those conversations when you guys were trying to identify which these patients were best for the technique?
So I think it's a great idea of Roberto. Roberto is very clever, in my opinion. And we start to find the MAC disease in this patient.
And to give the audience a little bit of understanding, the MAC means medial artery calcification. And this is the idea of with 2 X-ray projections of the foot, you can actually see the Mönchberg signs, the tracks of calcium in the vessels. And if there's X amount of tracks, then that surmounts to a high calcium score, which means overall the foot, everything, the metatarsal, the digitals, is full of calcium, medial artery calcification. And those patients essentially have a different pattern of disease. And that's what you guys started understanding and then trying to classify it to nowadays being something we all normally look at.
Yes, but to be honest, we didn't start from the foot. We start from the groin. And what happened? Happened that when we put the patient on the cath lab and start to do the first X-ray to plan the puncture, what was the common signs are that there are a lot of calcification, a sort of natural roadmap of the common femoral artery, iliac artery, SFA profunda. And all the patients have the same characteristic. This kind of natural roadmap due to the calcification of the wall and the sad disease. And Roberto start to study all the X-ray, basal X-ray on the SFA, on the POP, and the pedal artery. And I recognize that there is the medium artery calcification is not a disease of the foot, is a disease of the entire body. Mm-hmm. Because if you do an X-ray of the abdomen of the patient, of the hand of the patient, you will find the same clinical characteristic. Medium artery calcification that are a sort of rail track on the artery. And the rising question is sad disease and MAC disease was the same aspect
in
of the
sad disease
thing.
To small expand
artery,
small artery
disease. Disease. Because the definition of the small artery disease, it was a definition that has been always avoided by vascular surgery, because in 1991, if I remember well, Pomposelli say, don't speak about SAD disease, small artery disease, small vessel disease, because it's misleading for the vascular surgeon. So doesn't exist small vessel disease, but they suggest us to feel the resistance of the arterial bed down to the anastomosis by flushing, apparent solution. So if you do a flushing or apparent solution in your posterior tibial artery and you feel resistance, in it's a patient with high resistance, with high disease of all the vessel BTA. But we cannot speak about small vessel disease. So we start to speak again of small artery disease. And it was, perhaps, if I don't remember, during a summer school in which there was Chris Hattinger, Robert Freiberg, in which we discussed for the first time of our experience of 10 patients. And he was a sort of collegial idea that perhaps there is a new actor in CLTI patient, and we are facing to a new kind of disease. But the raising question is why? Which is the problem that lead the patient to a sad MAC disease, respect a patient that haven't no sad disease, but only a big artery disease. All the patients are diabetes, all the patients have a renal failure, but what is the difference? Why some patients develop a MAC disease and the other patient no?
Maybe the answer could be the neuropathy, the role of the neuropathy.
The role of the neuropathy, perhaps the role, in my opinion, of the junk food. Probably, because...
Maybe.
But I think the hemodialysis itself, those because those are probably the worst patients in the way that I've identified it.
Correct.
It seems like there is, in renal failure patients, this is a paper I like quoting a lot, where the vascular, the smooth muscle cells, when exposed to high levels of calcium and phosphorus and some of these derangements that happen in renal failure, they phenotypically change, and the VSMC now actually starts depositing nanocrystals. And I know this is hypothetical, but for me, that's the patient when I moved from Arizona to Houston. That was when I had my uh-oh moment, right? That's when I'm like, nothing that I do works.
In San Antonio, it's worse.
And nothing that I do works. And what I could constantly see was that it was typically renal failures. So, you know, they would have their AV fistula. They would, you know, I would probably see them for that. Then, oh, I have a wound in the toe. Then I would go try to get through the calcium, open something, maybe do a little atherectomy with a CSI, whatever. Occluded in 2 months, occluded in 3 months, and then chop, 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 what Roberto says, the salami effect. Pa, 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 pa. You're going back, but and it's...
Roberto gave a talk, unstopped. I don't know where I saw it, but he looked at the histology of it. And it's very interesting because a lot of the lumen loss is due to neonatal hyperplasia, which is the phenotypical changes in the small muscle cells. So if you look at that, you're like, okay, like... what we're doing doesn't work, because what we're doing is not meant to treat smooth muscle cell proliferation in, like, you know, 2 millimeter vessels. Mm. So for me, like, you know, why, like, if you look at that, why CSI? You're just going to, like, embolize all those smooth muscle cells down. Like, I don't know.
I think that then the next episode of this story could be the selection of these patients. It could be to know exactly we must exclude from the beginning for this kind of revascularization, because I think that if we collect all the data we have all around the world, I think that we could have the answer to exclude or to include some patients and not some others.
Are you guys treating end-stage renal disease patients with arterialization? Because I stopped. When they came to me at that point,
Exactly the patient that needs it.
They have a high failure rate. We saw that in the trials. They have a very high failure rates compared to...
But that's dragged by mortality primarily.
Yeah, exactly. Because those patients...
So then you stop treating them because they die?
Yeah, because they're going to die and within a very short time period. And do these patients want to be struggling with a wound for the year? Because it takes, 8 months to heal on average?
Offered them a major amputation?
Yeah, that's what I started doing.
That's pretty categorical. What do you think about that? Andrea, I'll put you on the spot.
You must be honest with the patient and told the patient that if you carry on a major amputation, the risk of the mortality is high. But I understand also your point. In the time of healing, it's very, very long, respect to direct revascularization. And in my opinion, it's not a decision of us. It's a collegial decision with the patient.
Mm-hmm.
What I told to the patient, what we told to the patient before an arterialization, for example, is you must fall in love with me because you will see me for 4 or 5 months,
yeah,
more than your wife, and sometimes it's better.
What I've tried to do is try to identify early issues that lead to mortality, specifically cardiovascular. And if I'm going to put the patient through the ropes, then I'm going to talk to my cardiologist and I'm going to say, hey, this guy's bad protoplasm. You know, they've got AV fistula, they're in cerebral disease, but they want to save their legs. And I want to do as much as I need to do. Would you mind also looking at the heart, maybe making sure that maybe he doesn't have an LAD lesion that needs to be treated ahead of time? But I don't know that I have categorically already said, no, I can't treat you. Or that I lean towards a major amputation as a way for those patients. I almost feel that is the perfect place. But you know, like everything.
I think it is.
You're about to say something, Giacomo.
No. I want just to say that is a very hard decision. I think that today we do not know who could be eligible for a quite high probability to achieve the goal or not. So I think that today we do not know the answer to your question. I think that as Andrea have just told, I think that we have to talk to the patients, we have to talk to the relatives, to the family, etc., and to explain what the arterialization protocol means. If you do not have compliance, if you do not have the attention of the patients, because as you have just said, is a long, long treatment, not just the arterialization, foot care. You have to wait 90 days when it is possible, because we have to talk about the risk of infection during these months and during this week. You cannot use, for example, the same follow-up you have for regular diabetic foot patients. These patients must be visited regularly in a very short period, etc. We have to check for infection. We have to check for many other things that usually you are not used to check.
And so, I think when we talk about this, we have to kind of lay a foundation that your situation with Brian Lipo, which is a brilliant podiatrist, you guys working together is very different. That, because I've had a lot of friends reach out to me and say, hey, you know, can you like help me, you know, start doing these things? And for me, like, I'm the podiatrist. So I, you know, even though we had Dr. Ross, even though we have Brian, to be honest, when I was training, that wasn't my priority. My priority was vascular surgery.
Yeah.
So I did procedures with them, but I don't have the podiatric expertise. So I have to understand my own limitations in that. And for the foot care, I still have a significant learning curve compared to Giacomo, compared to Brian. So maybe that's
why. Yeah, but I think that's a very honest thing to say, because also, you know, you need to focus on your vascular care. And if you open the floodgates to podiatric care, then you're going to be stuck every week doing foot care that, let's be honest, in America doesn't pay well.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it pays better in other places, but in America, the reimbursement tied to that is really bad. And that's why there is a necessity, even from a financial standpoint, to have a toe and flow team, because the podiatrist needs to be offloading the surgeon so that each one does their part, but they work cohesively, right? Yeah. There's a fluidity in that conversation. Point. And I'm seeing this I'm going through this pain because now I'm in a different hospital system. I did bring Brian on, but what happens is now the podiatrists in this other hospital are sending me no-option CLTI patients. But they don't know how to treat the arterialization podiatric. So the first thing they do is they see the patient a week later and they're like, oh, you probably need a below the knee amputation.
Yeah.
A 1 week later after an arterialization. Yeah. So I have to go and talk to the, have to talk to the podiatrist again. Why are you saying this? Mm-hmm. I told you it was different. I told you you had to wait. Yeah. Why did you open your mouth? Now I have to, now you're losing hours of your day talking to the sister and talking to the mother and talking to the brother.
That's a huge part.
So
it's
much.
Like, and not just like when they're in the hospital, the every single person comes into the room like after you've done it and they're like, oh, this looks way worse. And I was like, I've told every single person in this hospital that this would happen. And just like,
listen, I did this. I talked to every, there's this one case. And I, with this, we got to start closing out. But there's this one case that I pulled this new podiatrist in. I talked to him for an hour. I told him what I was going to do. I talked to the family for an hour and I told them what I was going to do and everybody was fine. I talked to the internal medicine guy taking care of the patient. And it happens that I was going to Costa Rica for a vacation with my family. So I'm like, okay, everything's good. He's in autopilot for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I leave. Second day, 48 hours later, the internal medicine guy says, ah, the guy has a fever. The leg has to come off. Have you explored other reasons for this? It's open. There's no infection. So the podiatrist comes and says, well, I'm not sure. Let's get a foot MRI.
Oh, my God.
And this quest for ridiculousness starts. And they listen what happened. Because I'm out and I say, I am out of the country. I told you guys what to do. I don't want to receive more calls about this.
Yeah.
Nobody touches my patient. They go and they call another vascular surgery team. Thankfully, the vascular surgery team respects me. Yeah. They call me. They're like, hey, we were asked to give a second opinion. What do you want to do? I said, don't do anything. They're like, okay, we'll leave it alone. So you know what they do? They call orthopedic surgeon to see if they want to cut the leg. Okay, so the ortho guy comes and calls me. He's like, hey, they want me to cut the leg. But your note says, do not cut the leg for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I said, please, don't cut the leg. And the story goes, this guy is now grafted and walking and doing fine.
Yeah.
It just was a matter of time. And so these things are important, all these other sides that you have to control.
The experience makes the difference.
Totally.
The experience. The experience. The experience. And it's amazing because probably now after perhaps 100 of hybrid arterialization, we
100.
Yes. No. We just know how is the fate of the patient. We just know. We look in the eyes.
Do you still think now that
30%.
You've got 100, now that you've got 100 plus, do you still think if we start with the idea that these are no option patients that are probably going to get an amputation, do you believe that 70?
Yeah,
percent is appropriate.
65-70%.
Yeah, less 65. Than 70. But I will talk about 60-65. Yes.
Yeah.
What do you think the 35 that don't do well? Do you have an explanation, Giacomo?
Wrong indication. Wrong patient.
In some patients, yes. For example, inflammatory patients, in my opinion, must be excluded by the
acute limb ischemia needs to be excluded.
The last case that I showed in my lecture, it was a patient in which there was no indication to arterialization. And Giacomo told, in my opinion, he's not a good candidate. But we are in front of a patient in...
It's difficult too.
It's very difficult because he was a young patient that slept 3 months in the chair. And he didn't want to lose his leg, so it was very difficult because we saw the amputation as a failure of our work, but we must remember that sometimes a limb salvage is only in our mind. We must talk of functional limb salvage because the limb salvage by themselves is only in our mind because the patient is a patient that undergo a 5-6 procedure, go in the OR, go in the cath lab, go to the podiatrist, go every day.
Maybe
with
an annealing ulcer for years and years, and maybe
what
major
kind
amputation
of, what kind of life we guarantee to our patient? Patient 8 months, 9 months of continuing dressing, infection, medication, don't peer on the foot. So sometimes it's only in our mind, and we look to the amputation, major amputation, as a failure. But back to the first patient, that the last patient, it was a wrong indication because it was a sort of subacute ischemia. Yeah. We tried to do something, but we failed. But I don't know, because nowadays, after 5 months, we have still the leg attached, and we saw a little bit improvement of the lesion on the foot. That's why I told you it's a wave. We have the first step in the post-op that we are all of us are happy because the system is working, the pain is going away, and the lesion appear well. Then we have the shock phase in which there are all is going worse. You have a progressive failure of the blood flow on the foot. You have a worsening of the ischemia, worsening of the ischemic lesion, and we learn to be patient and to take time. I think that as a surgeon, I could think, because in my opinion, is the surgeon has a different mentality of the internal medicine. He wants to do all
faster. You are
more
intelligent.
Yes.
You want to resolve.
You want
resolution.
You have a patient with pain. You go in the cath lab on the operatory theater. You treat the patient. After 3 hours, 4 hours, the patient is going out from the cath lab of OR without any pain.
Done.
You solve the problem in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
That's our force. That's our ego.
Yeah.
And in this case, you force yourself. You force your mentality because you have not to touch the patient. If you are in the OR, the worst thing that you can do is touch something that is going well. If you don't know if it happened to you, but when I complete my for example, my anastomosis or my TIA, I'm looking to the TIA, and I start to touch here, there is some bleeding, I give another stitches on the point, and in the app, the disaster, because you didn't touch anything, and that's the problem with this patient. You must be waiting and taking your time. This is the most difficult thing that a surgeon can do. Take time.
Listen, guys, we could talk hours. I want to be respectful of your time, the fact that you may have probably some other conference engagements and needs. This has been enlightening, to say the least, inspiring, and hopefully some young people out there after this history can understand that it takes mavericks, it takes people to push, it takes people to, it's amazing. So, guys, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been beautiful. It's going to be on all the podcasts, Spotify, Apple. We can certainly share it with you guys. And hopefully the listeners out there have enjoyed it today. Lucas, any final
words? No, thank you. I mean, this was amazing. And I think this was an important conversation.
Yeah, very important one. Very timely. And a whole lot more to come on arterializations. We are just starting.
Yeah.
So hopefully there will be other people out there to push this even more forward and understand the technique and understand exactly who gets what and when. So to all of you out there, thank you very much. Pura vida.
Yeah.
Ciao.
Thank you. Ciao.